This weekend's NFL draft will have a heavy hand in deciding the future of NFL franchises as they move forward with putting together their rosters for next season. Despite its remote nature this year, there's still plenty of controversy about how this year's draft is going to shake out. Will Tua Tagovailoa tumble out of the top 10? Is Joe Burrow the real deal? Which team stands to gain the most after this week? Find out on this episode of Stone Cold Sports Talk. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 17 of Stone Cold Sports Talk. I'm Luke Stone, joined again by Taff Gant and Jay Banzette. Boys, I've watched clips from Kevin Costner and Jennifer Garner's draft day. I've read all the mocks. Jay has put together his own. And finally, after no controversial live sports for more than a month, we have something to talk about. It's an exciting, exciting week to be a sports fan. Obviously, we got The Last Dance Parts 1 and 2 on Sunday night on ESPN, which were incredible. And then, of course, the NFL draft. We will start with this. Boys, right now, Tua Tagovailoa, widely projected to go somewhere in the top five. There are some maybe concerns about his Wonderlic score from spring of 2018 at Alabama and other concerns, obviously, with potentially career-ending injuries that he's managed to survive thus far. Jay, we'll start with you. You've been tracking on the draft for a couple of months now. Do you think Tua Tagovailoa will tumble, or do you think that his spot at five is relatively secure?
I think with Miami being at five, I think he won't make it out of the top five. But if Miami were to make the choice to trade down with somebody who's trying to come up and get a Justin Herbert, jump the Chargers maybe when the Chargers are at six, try and trade up with Miami, then he could fall a little bit, but there's certainly no way he makes it out of the top five, and much less the top 10 to me.
Taff, what do you think?
Well, I thought that it was clear ever since Joe Burrow proved that he was going to be the number one overall pick. I think that's the lock right now for the Bengals. But it was clear for a while that Tua was going to be the next quarterback off the board. And in the case of this draft, that would mean that he would go number five to the Dolphins. But recently there's been some speculation, like you were saying, that the Dolphins might pick Justin Herbert, but I have a hard time believing that. I think that Tua, he's definitely a risk with his hip injury, but I think that it's a risk that is worth taking, because like we said in the last podcast, I think we all agreed that Tua has the highest ceiling out of any quarterback in this draft, and based on his arm strength and just based on what he showed at Alabama and the improvement that he had, I think that he could turn into something special in Miami. And that's why I think he'll go number five.
The perplexing thing that you've thrown into all of this is the Justin Herbert curveball. There's some talk of the Lions potentially trading down from the top five and having Los Angeles. I'm going to continue calling them the San Diego Chargers until they get their stadium.
Until they can become the dominant brother in L.A., let's call them San Diego.
Or until they sell like 5,000 tickets for a home game. Maybe that'll be another benchmark.
And they sell 5,000 tickets. It's just that they don't get 5,000 Chargers fans.
Yeah, that's true. I would say that the Herbert piece is interesting if he does go to L.A. with that number. If L.A. moves up to that number three pick, and the other thing to consider with Tua is there's a chance that the Dolphins maybe think that if Herbert goes first, there's a chance Miami thinks, okay, well, no one else in the top 10 likes him enough. Maybe we can address another need first at number five, and then maybe trade 18 or 26 somewhere down in the top 15. Because if you look at the teams behind Miami in the draft order, assuming that Los Angeles moves up, you've got Carolina. They have Bridgewater. They seem to be content with that. At number eight, you have Arizona. They have Kyler Murray. They're set. Number nine, maybe the Jags might want to take a quarterback, but they seem pretty content with Minshew for now. And then 10, you have Cleveland, Baker Mayfield, 11, Sam Darnold, 12. It's a potential trade spot for Miami to move up with Las Vegas there. But I think that Tua is going to end up in Miami. It's just a matter of where Miami ends up taking him. They have a lot of flexibility there. And the stuff I've been reading the last couple of days, Taft, you mentioned potentially Herbert to Miami. I don't think the Dolphins are going to be comfortable taking him at five. The stuff that I've that I've read. There's some rumors around Stephen Ross, obviously draft rumors, taken with a grain of salt, but that seems to be the consensus right now in Miami, is that it's either Tua or someone else big at five, and then best available quarterback later. I think, and I think we all probably agree here, Tua at five is the most likely scenario for right now.
Yeah, I don't really get the Justin Herbert hype. I mean, from what we saw with him at Oregon this year, he wasn't that impressive. I mean, we didn't see that much improvement from him as the season went on. We saw him struggle in many games. And when under the big lights, you could say in the late night Pac-12 games, as big as it gets at 10 p.m. football. But he really didn't fulfill the potential that people thought that he would grow into in this last year. And in the beginning of the season, people were using the hashtag tank for Tua. And I think that's still the case for the Dolphins, but they're going to get him at the number five spot instead.
You got to think about it. Herbert, I'm kind of countering here with Taft. Herbert, when you really think about it, the best player that they had on offense was Penei Sewell, and he won the Outland Trophy at left tackle. He didn't have like a – he didn't have four first-round targets at wide receiver like Tua did, or five going out like Joe Burrow did. So he didn't have the people around him to be able to throw like that. And he really carried that Oregon team to a Pac-12 title. They beat a heavily favored Utah team in the Pac-12 championship. And then he went on to win Rose Bowl MVP, Senior Bowl practice MVP, Senior Bowl game MVP, and was the best quarterback at the combine. So he's kind of – I've heard a lot of people say he's, like, checked all the boxes off. And so he's, like, done everything right, especially when you saw him get out of that Oregon system at the Senior Bowl. He played extraordinarily well. He won the MVP of that game, went, like, 9 for 12, I believe it was. So it's just – sure, he didn't play – the Oregon offense really didn't allow him to show, like, his true – strengths as a prototypical down the field passer. It was more, I think the stat was he threw 100 screens out of like 375 total passes this year, which is really strange to think about. But he never really had an opportunity to throw the ball down the field until he got to Mobile in the Senior Bowl when he won MVP of the practice week and the game.
I think the biggest thing there is that, like Taff was saying, about the rest of the season was kind of mediocre. The thing Herbert has going for him right now is, with the exception of Joe Burrow, I don't know who has a better – I mean, the Herbert late season tape at his very best, peaking at the right time, is probably on par with where Tua was, if you kind of take all the other factors in consideration, with the fact that, like you said, Tua had four first-round targets basically on offense with him, and Justin Herbert basically had a good running back to throw some screen passes to.
But you'll also have to take into account the defenses that they're going up against. I mean, Tua was facing the SEC, whereas Justin Herbert was going up against Pac-12 defenses, and we know the difference there. I know that Tua had more weapons, and that's definitely something to take into account. But you also have to consider who they were facing on defense.
What was the final score of the Utah game? Because Utah was probably the best defense they played.
Yeah, it was 37-15. No, they played Wisconsin, and he had three touchdowns on the ground.
Yeah.
Wisconsin was the best defense they played.
And then, I think Herbert has the advantage of basically when you watch Justin Herbert's tape from late in the season, you can see him against his best defenses, and kind of it's a double-edged sword, the whole West Coast thing. You know, on one hand, not a lot of exposure for West Coast guys playing Friday Night Lights in the Pac-12 and whatnot. But at the same time, if a guy kind of, you know, let's say that someone like Tua in a primetime game really isn't that impressive, you end up with a chance at that really hurting draft stock. But for Justin Herbert, one bad game in a Friday Night Lights thing, scouts will notice it, but the rest of the football media is probably not really focused on it. So there's a chance for maybe more margin for error there. So let's move on to talk about the other loaded position group in this draft, wide receivers. Jerry Jeudy, CeeDee Lamb, Henry Ruggs, among other names, from schools small and large. You have guys like Jalen Reagor who have a potential to really make an impact at the next level. But who is the most NFL-ready receiver out of this group?
I've got two on my mind. One who I guarantee you've heard of, you just listed him, and one who you haven't heard of quite yet, but you will know of very quickly. Jerry Jeudy is, Well, first of all, when I watched Amari Cooper come out of Alabama in 2014, I was just stunned at how well he could run routes and how he could create space at the top of his routes and give his quarterbacks windows. And he certainly does it today with the Dallas Cowboys, but Jerry Jeudy does it on par with what Amari Cooper does today, 6 years later. And that's to say Jerry Jeudy is a quarterback's best friend, because he may not be the fastest guy. He's not 6'6". He can't jump 45 inches. But that dude is always open. Always, always open. And so he's going to make an impact. I've called him a Pro Bowler for 2 years in college football for a reason, because he can just always get open. And so I think he's definitely the most NFL ready. And then another guy, very similar traits, a little taller, Van Jefferson Stone. I know you're a Florida fan. He showed out at the Senior Bowl. I saw it when he played LSU. I went back and watched that game 2 weeks ago. He was working with Christian Fulton and Derek Stingley and caught a touchdown over the middle where he flipped Stingley's hips from the left side at the 3 yard line and caught a ball with, I believe it was Grant Delpit coming down and laying the wood. And Jefferson actually got hurt on the play, but he still caught the ball for a touchdown. So he's not fast. I think he ran 4.5 at the combine, but he's got a great lineage. His dad played in the NFL. He's a receivers coach in the NFL right now. He creates a whole lot of separation, just like Jerry Jeudy. So he's a guy that a team can get second, third, maybe fourth if he falls that far. I don't think he will get out of day two, but he's very similar to Jeudy in that he can create separation and he's going to make an impact immediately.
I would say that go ahead, Taft.
Yeah, I definitely agree with Jerry Jeudy from what Jay's saying, but there's also three others that you have to keep in mind. I mean, this is a loaded draft class for the wide receiver position. You have Jerry Jeudy and Henry Ruggs coming from Alabama. Then you go over to LSU with Justin Jefferson, who caught 4 touchdowns in – was that the SEC championship or the national championship?
Peach Bowl.
Yeah, I think it was a semi, because I don't even think they scored 4 touchdowns against Georgia.
Yeah, it was in the first half versus Oklahoma. Jefferson is a guy that I could, like, from every game I watched this year, I was like, this guy's legit. He's going to make an impact in the NFL. And then the other one is CeeDee Lamb. I mean, all 4 of those guys, when I was watching them this season, I thought that they were NFL wide receivers playing one more year in college just to run circles around the defensive backs of their opponents. And take your pick, you're going to get a starting receiver and a future Pro Bowler out of those 4.
I'm excited to see where what a guy like Henry Ruggs can do in the NFL, because you're basically getting Tyreek Hill, but with an extra 1.5, 2 inches. I mean, the speed, he ran a 4.27 at the combine. It's just unreal.
Comparisons to John Ross are extremely off, frankly, because Ruggs is so much more physical and so much just a stronger athlete than Ross was. And you've seen what Ross has done. It's basically nothing in the NFL, because he doesn't have the ability to get off of press coverage when people come and choose to be physical with him. And Ruggs didn't really see that much of press coverage in college either. But I know he's got the strength, and you can just see it with his body. He's chiseled. He's strong. He's worked in the weight room. And he's a guy who you talk – like, you go listen to what he has to say, like how he's come to this point in the NFL draft. Whenever he scores a touchdown, he sends up a 3 to the sky, because his childhood best friend was killed in a car accident when they were in high school. And he was the guy who actually told Ruggs that Ruggs would be a 5-star recruit at Alabama. They were high school basketball teammates who won the state championship. And he plays for his family, because he came up dirt poor. He plays for that friend that he lost. He plays for his family so he can support them. So he's one of those guys who he's fast as all get out. He's strong. He's physical. And he plays for a reason. He's not one of those people who plays just because he's good. He plays because he wants to play, and he plays because he wants to be great. So he may not start off so hot in the league because teams are going to figure out how to jam him and how to mitigate his ability to get off the line of scrimmage. But once he figures out the small things, he's going to be phenomenal.
Yeah, an interesting storyline to watch out for. There's some speculation that the Chiefs might trade up to get Henry Ruggs just because he has that speed, and it would give them another – fast receiver to add.
Mecole Hardman, Tyreek Hill, and Henry Ruggs?
Yeah, just think about that. I mean, 2 are already hard enough to cover and help win them a Super Bowl. They also had some help from Patrick Mahomes, who was an outstanding quarterback last season. But just something to watch out for, Henry Ruggs to Kansas City. Kansas City might have to be willing to give up some later draft picks, but it would definitely be interesting if they add their speed demon to Kansas City.
I'm excited to see where CeeDee Lamb ends up in all this. I think if he ends up in the right system, let's say that like Jacksonville maybe takes a risk and takes him, a guy like Gardner Minshew with CeeDee Lamb would first of all be just some of the most fun football to watch. But if he can end up, or maybe if I would love to see, 8-10, you have Arizona and Cleveland. Both of college quarterbacks.
Arizona is not taking a receiver. They just signed DeAndre Hopkins. Eliminate that. If they wanted to, but they got nobody to protect Kyler Murray in the process.
I just love the idea of CeeDee Lamb or Jerry Jeudy playing with their college quarterbacks. So I don't know. Maybe the Dolphins trade up, get Jerry Jeudy and Tua Tagovailoa, and they basically just become Alabama South. All right. So
if you took all of the prospects from this draft, how many and created one team? How many years would it take for them to win the Super Bowl, if they would at all?
They wouldn't beat Kansas City. There's no way. There's not
enough, right off the bat.
There's not enough corners to get a stop. You've got Okuda, who I guess could take away Sammy Watkins maybe, but then you're leaving C.J. Henderson on Tyreek Hill, and that's a problem. But actually, Isaiah Simmons would match up with Travis Kelce kind of nice. So
yeah, and then also, I don't know if Kansas City would be able to stop on those four receivers. And then a dangerous backfield, too, a Swift and Taylor. I don't know. It'd be interesting. This draft class is special.
You all brought up we were talking earlier about teams that maybe kind of need a quarterback. That definitely is in the top five, Cincinnati, Miami. If they don't draft a quarterback, they won't be
able to buy it. And the Chargers. Add the Chargers.
Yeah. So those three definitely going to take a quarterback. Other potential scenarios, Washington, Jacksonville, and Denver are all kind of in this sort of weird ether where you're like, they could take a quarterback, they could wait to get Love, they could maybe try to get someone like Eason and sit him for a year and just or Eason or Fromm and sit him for a year and see what happens. But the most interesting team in the top 15 to see what they end up doing in the quarterback department, I would say, is Denver. Because I don't really know is Drew Lock really going to be – outside of the teams that we definitely know, like, is Drew Lock really the long-term answer?
I think so. Denver would be showing a lot more interest in one of these quarters, in one of the top three, maybe even the top two. But, hey, if you remember going into last year's regular season, so fall of 2018, everybody thought Drew Lock was going to be a top 10 pick out of Missouri, and he actually fell the second round where Denver took him, and they started Drew Lock. Let me see. I think that was certainly the last part of the season.
I feel like 9 or 10 games, probably somewhere in that neighborhood.
He actually, let's see, completed 64% of his passes, started 5 games, 64% of his passes, 1,020 yards, 7 touchdowns, 3 picks in 5 games, which is not bad. And considering he only had Cortland Sutton to throw to, that's not terrible.
Hey, you want to play a fun game? Name a Denver Broncos tight end.
No offense. They took him last year in the first round.
You're no fun.
Good game, Sam.
So the Denver situation with Drew Lock certainly kind of developing. Jacksonville with Minshew, apparently that's their answer. And then the Dwayne Haskins situation.
You as a Dolphins fan should be feasting right now because your Dolphins are about to go up high, and Jacksonville's going to be playing Gardner Minshew the entire season.
You know, I do wonder if – I wonder if Dwayne Haskins is going to get some of the Josh Rosen treatment. I know they're going to take Chase.
There's a difference because Josh Rosen got treated the way he did because – Arizona brought in a totally different style of offense, and it was such a unique year with somebody like Kyler Murray coming into the draft. It was a perfect fit of quarterback special talents with a quarterback coach, head coach who runs a specific system. And so Josh Rosen didn't fit that system. But even if Kingsbury had still been hired and Kyler Murray hadn't been in the draft, they still would have stuck with Josh Rosen. That was a weird, unique scenario.
I just wonder if Dwayne Haskins is really going to develop as much as they want to with Ron Rivera.
You think he got outplayed last year by Daniel Jones by a wide margin.
And Jones was supposed to be the bigger risk.
Yes. Haskins
also showed up against Kyle Allen in Carolina last year. So keep in mind, Haskins did show some good things at the end of last season. It'll be interesting.
Well, go ahead, Jeff.
I think Ron Rivera and Haskins will figure it out next year. That'll be the answer.
Look at this. Haskins completed 58.5% of his passes for 7 touchdowns and 7 picks. It's not first round numbers, but also it's Washington, so you got to get.
Keep in mind that the Redskins were also tanking while that was going on.
The thing that surprised me the most with the thing that I think is the biggest potential surprise in this year's draft is there's this kind of – we talked about it at the top, that Detroit is just kind of assumed to trade out of 3. Stafford still has some years of his prime left, or maybe a year or two of his prime left. He's still a, by and large, very serviceable quarterback. He just needs some freaking help, and probably not Matt Patricia, but that's beside the point. I would not be stunned, though, if Detroit doesn't get a good enough offer. If there's not something that jumps out at them as, okay, this is something that we're going to take to move down. I don't think it's really insane if they draft a quarterback, if they draft Herbert or Tua and sit him behind Stafford and deal Stafford. Because at some point, you need money. Stafford is way too much of a money suck on that team to get the people that they need to win.
No, they had the worst defense in the league last year against the pass and lost their best corner in free agency.
Yeah, Jeff Okuda makes too much sense.
They have nowhere else to go but Jeff Okuda. They ranked dead last in the league last year against the pass and lost their best corner.
Yeah, especially Matt Patricia, who's a defensive-minded guy. I can't see them taking a quarterback at 3.
I mean, let's be honest. Matthew Stafford is like the second best quarterback in that division. He just hasn't had many people around him since Calvin Johnson retired.
Stone, you know the team you're forgetting about that needs a quarterback?
Who?
I see the Las Vegas Raiders taking Love with the 19th pick.
If he lasts that far.
If he lasts that far, that's right. But I do think that the Raiders are – definitely looking for a quarterback because John Gruden hasn't had his pick of his quarterback since he's taken over for that franchise. And it would also put a lot more pressure on Derek Carr, who was supposed to be the answer 2 years ago when he finally got some good people to throw the ball to. But I think that I would not be surprised if John Gruden went for Love or a quarterback.
Did they sign someone else? Okay.
So you have to think if they take Love, one of the three has to hit or Gruden is gone, basically.
That's an insane.
Well, he has a 10-year contract, so.
He can't get a second overall pick, a first rounder, and a second rounder to work.
They have the 12th and the 19th overall pick.
You know, there's a great website called isgrudengoneyet.com, and it's very simple. It just says no and then counts down the amount of time until John Gruden's contract is up. I've been on the site for about 45 seconds, and he's already made $5.
Wow.
I think the thing is I don't think you can have a quarterback room with 3 people. I don't think it works.
What's the old saying? If you got 3 quarterbacks, you have none. Look at 15 Ohio State. They had Cardale Jones, Baxter Miller, and JT Barrett and didn't make the playoff.
I think that you just, like, you can't – with a team – on a team with that many holes still left, I think John Gruden would be insane to get a third quarterback. Because, like, Mariota – say what you want about Marcus Mariota, but, like, he's fine to get you to, like, 8 wins a year. I mean,
he did in Tennessee.
Yeah, I mean, he's a fine, mediocre quarterback.
He didn't do the playoffs the year before.
Is John Gruden going to settle for 8 wins?
For now,
No, that's why he's going to take his pick of Carr or Mariota. And 8 wins is a heck of a lot more than 4 that they had last. Or
I think it was 5, 7-9. Maybe it was that. I don't know. I feel like I thought they started off the year, and I don't think they were going to be like the worst, and then they were serviceable. I just can't. I can't see having that many quarterbacks is just. If you have a top 15 pick and that's not your number one concern. Now, I wouldn't be surprised if they take a quarterback, period. Like, if they – maybe they try to wait for the second or third round and hope that someone like Jake Fromm or Jacob Eason is maybe some surprise, like a Russell Wilson. Obviously, the games are entirely different, but just in the comparison for getting a guy in the second or third round who you might one day start and maybe he raises your eyebrows in training camp and you throw him out there week one, I think that's a more likely scenario than them going Jordan Love.
Jake Fromm would make a whole lot of sense because you know how much Gruden, you've seen it on like the NFL mic'd up stuff, how much Gruden grills his quarterbacks. He wants them to memorize the playbook as soon as they're on in the facility. And from what I know, Jake Fromm, I was heard like Jake Fromm from the neck up is smarter than anybody else in the draft.
The Jake Fromm Wonderlic score was a 35.
Yes. What was yours?
Mine was a 35 today when I took it.
University of Georgia education.
The other question that we're kind of leaving out here is Joe Burrow is obviously going number one. I don't think there's any doubt in the world on that. I haven't checked.
Cincy would fire everybody in their front office if they did not take Joe Burrow.
Maybe you get a draft day situation. Maybe they just take Isaiah Simmons at one because they really like him. And then I have to pull off some insane trade where they actually end up trading their second rounders for the next 3 years, which is a terrible move by Sonny Weaver Jr., by the way. And he's shooting their organization in the foot. But I digress.
Movie podcast tomorrow night, question mark?
We'll see. Joe Burrow, I love the kid. I think he's a winner. I do question, though, is Cincinnati really going to work? Is that going to be the place? Is he going to be the one to take them back to the playoffs?
It's not back to the playoffs yet. They're worried about getting 3 wins, much less about going to the playoffs.
Like down the road, does this work?
Yes. People are thinking he's like going to be like a top 10 quarterback as soon as he steps in the league.
I think he's arrived.
Just look, his worst game last year, he completed 63% of his passes against Clemson for 5 touchdowns and no picks.
Wait, that was his worst game?
That was his worst game completion percentage-wise. It was his only game under 71, and it was 5 touchdowns and no picks.
Wait, that was his only game under 71?
Yes.
I think
it was 4 games above 80.
He did put up incredible numbers this season en route to winning the national championship. But I would be hesitant to jump on the Joe Burrow bandwagon. Although he's going to go number one to the Bengals, I don't know if you should jump on it too fast because he had one really good season in his career. And he had a lot of weapons to throw to and Clyde Edwards-Helaire in the backfield and a good offensive line. But honestly, Joe Burrow, I don't know if he's going to be able to take the Cincinnati Bengals anywhere, at least right off the bat, especially with all the talent that's in this draft class. I don't know if he's as good as people are saying he is just because everyone is still high on LSU this year, which was an incredible team. And Joe Burrow had many incredible performances, but I don't know. We'll see if it works out, but I'm not going to be shocked if he doesn't pan out like people are thinking.
I'll say this about Joe Burrow and the Cincinnati Bengals. They don't have Marvin Lewis anymore, which I applaud them for. That's impressive to be willing to.
God, they don't have Marvin Lewis.
The other thing is, I think that if Cincy builds out the right way, I think there's a lot of potential there. I think Andy Dalton's a weird fit with Tyler Boyd and AJ Green.
And Joe Mixon's good too. Problem is they got rid of Tyler Eifert. And if you look how much Joe Burrow used Thad Moss last year,
I think it's going to be a spot where we haven't talked about this trade yet. Maybe they try to move some stuff for OJ Howard. Like, it doesn't seem unthinkable to try to get him from Tampa for cheap.
Either him or Brate. There's no way Tampa goes into the season with Gronk, OJ Howard, and Cameron Brate all on the same roster.
I'm not saying – obviously, Cameron Brate and OJ Howard aren't Thaddeus Moss level good, or at least – I mean, obviously, OJ Howard might be, but the thing is, like, Thad Moss with the – I'm saying it at that level. So OJ Howard of the NFL versus Thad Moss of college, Thad Moss is probably a little better in his own class. Maybe. Jay's not convinced, but
OJ Howard was a top, maybe he was a first round pick in the NFL. Thad Moss is like a sixth rounder.
I think that but if they can get a tight, if they can take a tight end off of Tampa for cheap, because I don't, who's their starting tight end right now?
Let me look.
I should have, instead of saying, can you name one tight end in the Denver Broncos, I should have said, can you name one tight end in the Cincinnati Bengals?
They've currently got Drew Sample and CJ Uzoma.
Uzoma. Uzoma is their number one.
So they've got a nice running back with Joe Mixon. They've got Tyler Boyd, John Ross, and AJ Green. That's a quality three. Joan Williams comes back healthy at left tackle. That's going to be huge. And their offensive line is not – it's not terrible. It's not that great, but it's certainly not that bad. And they get Williams back this year after he missed all of last season, the first rounder from last year. So, we'll see.
Is Albert Aquabonham in this draft class?
Yes.
Am I imagining that?
I think he's my fifth tight end.
That's someone. He's a person.
He's a third rounder, probably third, fourth rounder.
That's maybe a spot Cleveland or Cincinnati looks for. Who knows?
Yeah, there's the tight end class. Frankly, this year is pitiful. They don't have a first round talent at all, but they've got a bunch of second, third round guys who are serviceable. Think about Adam Troutman from Dayton. Think about Harrison Bryant, Hunter Bryant. Komet will go early second. I've got him, or I think he's going to end up at 43 to Chicago. It's kind of a perfect fit. But Troutman, the Bryants, and Albert, how do you say his last name, son?
Aquagabonham, I think. Aquagabonham, that's what I don't know.
Something like
I didn't watch enough Missouri games this year because why would I?
Yes. They're serviceable guys. They can get in the third and fourth round, and certainly since he could go that way or ask, especially news breaking today of that Gronk trade, they could certainly contact Tampa if they wanted to.
So we hadn't built this into the initial – sorry, Taft, do you have one last word on this?
I was going to just add that Gronk's contract is only for 1 year, so don't think that just because they're getting him means that they need to get rid of their other two tight ends. I think that Gronk's going to be there for 1 year, and it's just going to be a farewell tour with Tom Brady. And definitely don't get rid of your other talent at that position. And there's nothing wrong with a two tight end set either. I mean, if they're going to have Chris Godwin and Rob Gronkowski on one end and then Mike Evans and O.J. Howard on the other, that's pretty dang hard to stop.
Well, they could put – the thing is they've got three.
Yeah.
And, I mean, like, they could get a serviceable piece from Cincinnati in exchange for that third tight end who they're not going to
use. DJ Uzoma is the answer.
Yes.
I think the other thing is Bruce Arians really a two tight end set kind of coach?
Think about the when he was in Arizona, who was their tight end? Exactly. We don't even
know. Wait. He had a hyphen in his last name.
Darren Fells?
No. It was like a double last name, I think. Let's see. 2015-ish.
Yeah, the year they went to the NFC Championship and got stomped on by the Panthers.
Let's see. 2015 Arizona Cardinals. Do they have the roster in here? They do. Tight end. Nope, it was Fells. Who am I thinking of? I think I'm thinking of Ricky Seals-Jones.
Bruce Arians has not used tight ends when he's been successful that much.
Am I thinking of Ricky Seals-Jones? Is that the person whose name I have in my head?
Seals-Jones.
Yes, he was on their team in 2017. And that was Arians last year in Arizona. All right, not entirely wrong.
Think about it. Tampa had the league's best passing offense last year with a guy at quarterback who threw 30 interceptions. And they picked up two Hall of Famers for that offense since that guy left.
He was also – that guy led the league in what was it? Was it total yards or completion percentage?
It was certainly not completion. It was passing yards.
James Winston threw an interception on 4.8% of his attempts.
He had a 1-to-1 ratio, and he had 30 touchdowns.
If I didn't watch so much NFL Red Zone this year,
The only dude to ever throw 30 touchdowns and 30 picks in a season.
Okay, well, let's talk about the symmetry here. One, the first 30-30 season. First play ever, or first passing attempt ever as a Tampa Bay Buccaneer.
Pick six. Last one, lost them a game in overtime.
That's the best part. It's not even that it was a pick six. That was a pick six in overtime, game over. Like a walk-off pick six from Jameis Winston is the only way that could have been.
It's classic. Now, the thing – I just wonder where he and Cam Newton are going to end up because –
Hold that thought. That's a fact or fake news at the end. Hold that thought. We can get into the conversation.
My goodness.
Let's move to facts or fake news now, and we'll discuss the Tampa Bay thing embedded in this. Facts or fake news number one, though, the Patriots will go below 500 next season.
That's a fact. I don't care who they're starting at quarterback. They're not winning eight games.
Taft?
Bill Belichick is magical, but without Tom Brady – fact.
Fake news 8-8. The Jets are not
getting I think you're underestimating that division this year. Josh Allen's gonna do well with the Bills, and the Dolphins will do well with their dozen plus one draft picks.
The Jets aren't gonna get there. They'll be good.
Who does New England have on offense that scares you? Nobody. Outside, maybe Sony Michel, maybe.
Sony Michel on the 2-yard line scares me, especially in fantasy.
Maybe. I mean, Edelman was great because he threw with Tom Brady for 12 months of the year.
Edelman's going to start at quarterback and go full Lynn Bowden Kentucky style? Yeah.
You know how the Warriors this year just were getting destroyed in every game, and it's because teams were going all out just to get revenge from getting their butts whooped over the last 4 years when the Warriors were dominant. It's going to be like that in New England. Teams are going to be going – they're going to be gunning for the Patriots just to get revenge from their 20-year dynasty with Tom Brady. And I think the Jets – I'm bringing that example – that foreshadowing up because I think the Jets are going to get some revenge in at least one game next year.
What's the score of this game going to be? Patriots at Chiefs this year.
Is that the first game of the season?
No. They don't have dates out on this website. Hold on.
I don't think the schedule has dates yet, does it?
I can't imagine. Yes, wait. No, they don't. That's last year. I think, yeah.
Can we just have Brady play 32 games next year and play for Tampa and New England at the same time to keep things interesting?
I wish they played each other, but I looked this afternoon. Tampa does not play New England.
Oh, so it's only gonna be when they meet in the Super Bowl? When the 7-9 New England Patriots sneak into a wild card spot in a top heavy AFC East, get three road upsets, end up in the Super Bowl. I say fake news, Patriots go 8-8. That's my verdict.
I could definitely see Bill Belichick like hitting up Tom Brady and be like, "Hey Tom, I know you're in Tampa right now, but if the Patriots have a Sunday night game and the Bucks are playing at 1 o'clock, like you just want to after your game just fly up here and start for us."
Honestly, there's probably some bizarre contract Robert Kraft would not tell anyone about that would exist and have that as a provision.
It'd be another gate. What would this one be? Contract gate. You've got the flight gate.
It'd be double dipping gate.
Yes.
All right, facts or fake news number two, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are going to be in the NFC Championship game.
Ugh. Let's think about who would get there. The East is terrible.
Jay said wearing a Dallas Cowboys hat.
It's an atrocity. It was the worst division we've seen in football history last year. And the Cowboys still – let's be honest.
NFC like, West.
All jokes NFC West, aside.
NFC West 2010.
All jokes aside, the Cowboys have a roster that can win an NFC championship. They have a roster to do that.
Yeah. I don't think anyone disagrees with you there.
But they somehow go 8-8. It drives me nuts.
Yeah. Yeah, NFC East, no one. I mean, the final four in the – NFC last year where it was San Francisco, Green Bay, right?
Yeah.
Then Minnesota and Seattle?
No, it was the Eagles. And it was the Eagles at four, and then Seattle was the five wild card.
So I think that when you stack it up there, I mean, like, the NFC is really good, but, like, there's no one who's Chiefs good in the NFC right now.
Yeah. Think about the quarterbacks in the AFC. You've got Lamar Jackson, you've got Deshaun Watson, you've got Patrick Mahomes. In the NFC, you've got a 42-year-old Tom Brady. How old is Drew Brees? How old is Aaron Rodgers?
And then Russell Wilson's the best quarterback in the probably the best quarterback in the NFC.
Yes. But he just doesn't have a Rob Gronkowski,
yeah,
or a Devontae Adams to throw to.
He's got
or
DK.
Michael Thomas DK, to throw to. Yeah,
DK in a couple years, but I'll take the bait first on this one. I think facts. I don't know who I see that Tampa Bay roster with Bruce Arians, who coached an otherwise kind of unremarkable Arizona team with 13-3 record that no one really saw coming in an NFC championship. Yeah, they got slaughtered, but they went there. And I feel like the NFC kind of has that same feel this year where it's like, you know, Carolina won the division, had a 15-1 record, but I don't really think there was ever a moment I looked at that Panthers team and I was like, this team feels like they're a Super Bowl champion.
You never said that?
No, I also don't watch a lot of NFC, but like during that entire Super Bowl, I was somehow convinced Peyton Manning was going to win. Like, I didn't see Cam Newton being the guy leading the game-winning drive in Santa Clara under the lights.
That game was also fixed because everybody knew Manning was retiring after it. So,
no, he was going to have to go drink some Budweiser and think about it. Come on.
I'll take Stan second. Or go ahead, Josh.
I was going to tell Stan to know who he's talking to because you got two North Carolinians.
Exactly.
And trying to talk bad about Cam Newton's godly year.
The one year he was ever worth being a one overall pick.
Go back and watch his highlight tape that year. My God. Every bit of number one pick. I'll take second crack at this. I'm going to say fake news. I don't see Tampa beating New Orleans simply because there's like basically no offseason workouts this year. So you've got to get Gronk and Tom Brady acclimated into this system in Tampa. Meanwhile, New Orleans just gets to keep going and going. And they've had three. The Minneapolis miracle. They had the Rams no call, and they had the no call possibility against Kyle Rudolph. And all three in the playoffs, all three game deciding plays that all didn't go their way. The Saints are going to catch a break, and they're going to make the Super Bowl.
I had the Saints winning the Super Bowl this past year. They didn't get done. I think that Drew Brees will get one more ring before he retires and his time's running up. So that's why I have them winning the Super Bowl this year. I do think the Buccaneers will get the wild card, though, because the NFC South is so dominant. I have to imagine that two teams will make the playoffs from that division.
The Bucs may go 12-4 and be a 5 seed.
All the more reason why division winners should not automatically get the first round playoff games. It's ridiculous. 7-9 Seattle never should have been hosting 11-5 New Orleans.
Well, tell the Saints that when they lost the game.
All right, final facts or fake news. Cam Newton and Jameis Winston will be on rosters by the start of training camp.
Well, considering that the start of training camp might be next year, changes the question.
By August 1st.
I'm going to There's just – think about Cam Newton. He's not a – I mean, like, he's a starting quarterback caliber player. He's no scrub. He doesn't throw 30 interceptions in a season. He has won an MVP. He's experienced. If anything, think about teams that are going to draft a young quarterback this year, a.k.a. the L.A. Chargers, who – I'm thinking LA specifically, they just lost their one veteran at quarterback. They traded away Phillip Rivers. And I think if you brought in Cam Newton to mentor, I think it's going to be Justin Herbert. Herbert's a similar body type, albeit nobody's really like Cam Newton, but Herbert's kind of similar and he's very similar with his arm talent and somewhat of the mobility. So I think you bring in Cam Newton to mentor, and Jameis Winston is a solid backup guy who maybe could – all you can really hope for is just to overtake if your starter gets hurt and he just tries to be successful. That's all you can really hope for on Jameis this time.
I'll go – it's tough because Jameis Winston and Cam Newton are two of the wild cards in the NFL, and they have been ever since they entered the league. So I'm going to go fake news just because I don't think that Cam Newton or Jameis Winston are going to rush it to find a new team. And especially with Cam Newton with his injuries, I wouldn't be surprised if he's like, yeah, I'm just going to take a season off. And one, have longer to make a decision, but secondly, to just get more healthy and have more potential when teams go to pick him up.
I'm gonna say fake news because the real dilemma is Cam Newton as a backup is a problem because he's just got this aura about him. He attracts a lot of attention. He'd be probably the most famous backup in the league, which is a problem with some organizations because you want your backup to just kind of sit.
And also, he's a starting caliber player.
It's weird to think of Cam Newton as a backup quarterback in the NFL. Yeah, like you said, he's a starting caliber player, and because of that, probably creates a pretty uncomfortable situation in a locker room. And then the thing with Jameis is you're trying to go for predictability. Well, I guess Jameis is the most predictable player in the league because you know he's going to throw an interception on somewhere around 5% of his passes.
He's consistently inconsistent.
And I think that's the problem. Is your backup quarterback, you want to be like Alex Smith, if he were a little worse, is probably like your prototypical backup quarterback in the NFL. Just kind of like consistent, efficient, not a lot of picks, not a lot of touchdowns, guaranteed to win, like just – laws of statistics just like wins about half the games he plays, maybe a little more than that. And the problem with Jameis is that if you're trying to just get a backup, it's like, okay, go in. We're going to have you throw the ball like 21, 22 times max. We're not trying to reinvent the wheel. You just kind of need to be consistent, be reliable when it's an obvious passing situation, find the guy. I think that it's a very problematic situation for a coach to say, I want the dude who threw 30 interceptions in the season. I want him to be my backup in case something goes wrong. And I want him to be the one that we throw into the fire when things go haywire.
Interesting take.
Do you disagree?
You want to throw a guy into the fire who's already thrown 30 interceptions in a regular environment?
No. That's why I'm saying fake news. I don't think he's going to get signed.
Okay, good.
No, I think that's the thing, is that you ask a coach and you're like, and especially if you're – backup market, you know, maybe like a Fitzpatrick is floating around if Miami decides to move on, or a Josh Rosen, or just someone. Maybe Nick Foles gets cut by Chicago or dealt because of that. Andy Dalton might be moving out of Cincinnati.
Might be. Definitely is going.
Yeah, and that's a backup quarterback right there, to someone who's like really boring. And Jameis Winston is not boring. He is exhilarating to watch.
He All sells right. tickets, that is for sure.
He does sell tickets and probably gets a lot of season ticket cancellations after they watch INT number 30 on the year. But then once they brought in Tom Brady, all those people came flooding back.
Have you heard about that? Within like 2 days of Tampa signing Tom Brady, there were 5,000 people on the season ticket wait list in Tampa.
Are you surprised?
Nope.
No. All right, that is going to wrap it up for episode 17 of Stone Cold Sports Talk. I'm Luke Stone. They are Taft Gann and JB on set. We'll see you next time.